This is Pure Decking, show number 402 for Thursday. What the hell is today? July the 30th. Whatever year you want it to be. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and when we're not using it for the show, using the soundboard to troll in TS. Which was fucking hilarious earlier. I'm Morps, and tonight we have RU. What's up, RU?
Much, man. Fighting with those good old Windows 10 updates. Breaking everything.
Yeah. It's getting on about time to try a Linux see if Linux's compatibility and wine with the Vulkan layer is... I mean, I know a lot of people already say it's ready, but it's time to give it another try. My problem is all the audio equipment. I mean, the equipment itself is fine, but sound cards need certain drivers and don't have a Linux version and shit like that. So, that and some of the work stuff doesn't play nice on Linux machines. Anyways.
Just fixed it. Oh, thank God for that.
Good. So something a little different to open with. You sent me a sound clip, are you? We're gonna play that.
Sound clip of the week.
We're gonna play this, and we can talk about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for all four. Yes or no answer. Do you believe that the Chinese government steals technology from U.S. companies? Start with Mr. Cook.
I don't know of specific cases where we have been stolen from by the government.
So you don't believe that the Chinese government's stealing technology from U.S. companies, or you're just saying that not from yours?
No, I'm saying I know of no case on ours where it occurred, which is I can only speak to firsthand knowledge.
Mr. Pichai, do you believe that the Chinese government steals technology from United States companies?
Congressman, I have no first-hand knowledge of any information stolen from Google in this regard.
Mr. Zuckerberg?
Congressman, I think it's well documented that the Chinese government steals technology from American companies.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Bezos? You're on mute.
Mr. Bezos, I believe you're on mute.
Sorry. I have heard many reports of that, and I haven't seen it personally, but I've heard many reports of it.
So of all the different products that Amazon carries, you haven't seen that in any of the companies that sell products on Amazon or your company yourself?
Oh, well, certainly there are knockoff products, if that's what you mean, and there are counterfeit products and all of that. But the Chinese, if the answer is the Chinese government stealing technology, that's the thing I've read reports of. But don't have personal experience with.
Before I call on the next witness, I want to recognize Mr. Pichai, who I think wants to make a correction for the hearing.
The only correction, thanks, Mr. Chairman. There was a question earlier about information with respect to China. I just wanted to acknowledge on record that I recalled in 2009 we had a well-publicized cyber attack originating there, which did exfiltrate some code from there. I just wanted to correct that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pichai. The record will so reflect. I recognize the gentlelady from Pennsylvania for 5 minutes.
So, first and foremost, I love the fact that talking on mute is such a universal problem, even at the top of these tech companies. For anybody who's been on nothing but WebExes like I have for the past several months, it's it's a common problem. Somebody sitting there giving an entire soliloquy monologue, and then nobody's hearing them. That or the, you know, you're sharing the wrong screen. That's always fun, too. For anybody who's not aware of this, the hearing was all done over looked like it was done over WebEx. So
yeah, that was probably one of the most interesting things. I must admit, I didn't get all of it. I watched about 3 hours of it, and look,
you'd think somebody would help Zuckerberg set up his camera so he didn't look like, you know, a fucking alien, but
I think he's just embraced that and he's going with it this point. I don't know whether some senators are in collusion with these individuals and these companies. You know, some of the questions were very softball. Some of the senators asking questions were like asking Mark Zuckerberg why he took down Don Jr.'s video. And he's like, I think that was a Twitter question. I didn't even know who they were addressing. They're woefully inadequate in knowledge to be questioning those men about their companies.
I can't watch C-SPAN or online streams of it anymore because you're just sitting there going, these are the people in charge of our country. God help
us
all.
I know, man. It begs belief sometimes, but you know, it sucks, but you have to sit there and watch it if you really want to get a grasp. And I mean, there are only two senators, maybe three at best, holding any of them to account. And then a lot of it was just for them to grandstand to get 5 minutes on Tucker.
That or to have clips for their next election bid.
Well, I watched Tucker yesterday, and he had a senator on, and it was a very weak line of questioning by Tucker. And it occurred to me after watching the 3.5 hour bits of this hearing that this senator is going to be back on tonight on Tucker, I'm betting, because he wanted the soft question from Tucker last night so he can come out and go, look what I did yesterday. Look what I did. See how good I am, Tucker? You accuse me of taking money from these people and I'm holding their feet to the fire. Because he was really hardball with a few of his questions. So it was just a big kabuki theater. That's all it was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, wasn't much to it, really.
Well, a lot of the times, what's really fun is when you look into it, a lot of these hearings, all of the questions are submitted in advance. And then the answers are submitted in writing in advance. And then they have the actual hearing, which most of them stick to what you would now feasibly call a script. I mean, you know, because they're going back and forth and agreeing on their answers and shit before they ever get up there and give the official hearings. And then occasionally you have a show trial like what they did with the Attorney General, which was... I mean, there was no real discussion there. That was all pure politics from what I saw of it.
So, yeah.
And any time you have hearings like this, you got to recognize it's all politics. It's not really investigating that much. But it was funny how quickly they flipped on China once Zuckerberg went, yeah, fuck China, they're stealing shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... Which,
for anybody who's wondering, he did that because he can't break into the Chinese market. None of the others wanted to speak ill of it because either they want to get in the Chinese market or they didn't want to admit to a data breach, which is why Google admitted from something from like 2009, which I guess that would open them up to legal scrutiny if they did, so I can understand that. I didn't mean to step on you there, are you? What were you going to say?
No. I agree. I think a lot of it was complicit. I don't want to say that they're corrupt or anything, but I don't know, man. But for people who are meant to be running a country and protecting it, they're definitely softballing these people and allowing them way too much leeway with their interpretations of community guidelines. I'm having a few issues with the words community guidelines. You know, you can't just... At this point, it feels like... I'm glad I'm not in the fray of the Twitter and the Facebook and all the fucking that shit. But when I'm watching those people... and you can't see my air quotes around people. And their so-called community... it just looks like the Zuckerbergs and your fucking Twitter people and shit like that have just put shock collars on all these people. I mean, roam free, go free, we'll shock you when you go too far. You know what I mean? You have no clue where the fucking boundaries is.
Well, that's why they all have community guidelines set up.
Well, dude, the guidelines are so fucking, you know.
Well, think about it. From a legal perspective, you have terms of service, and then you have community guidelines. Terms of service are technically a contract. Those are subject to contract law. If you're going to take a company to court, which I think Sargon is taking Patreon to court over their terms of service. Or not, yeah, was it Sargon? I think it was Sargon.
I have no idea, man.
Somebody's suing Patreon over terms of service, but it had to do with both him and Owen Benjamin getting banned from the platform. And Patreon stepped in it because they went back and updated their terms of service after the fact.
Oops.
And got called in it in the filings that, yeah, the changes that that they're referring to in the terms of service were implemented after. You know, it's like, oh, whoops. But community guidelines, now that's a much more nebulous document when it comes to illegal standpoint, right? Yeah. So you'll have terms of service they'll make some vague reference that we can also use our community guidelines, right? Where if you're going to update terms of service, you know, you got to have lawyers involved, you got to give notice, you have to give people a chance to opt out, all that stuff. But community guidelines, well, you can change those all the damn time whenever you want, because there's not nearly as much precedent about those, and whether or not they're really subject to contract law is questionable. It's never been, it's my knowledge, it's not been challenged. So until that makes it into court, who knows, right? You would think that being part of the term, you know, being referenced by the terms of service, that would bring it in under and it would get treated by like contract law as well. But that hasn't been tested, to my knowledge. Yeah. And not really being a lawyer, but just pretending to be one on the internet and when we're playing Dungeons and Dragons about the rules. Nah, I can't make that joke. Madman's the rules lawyer. Anyways, tell you what, every fucking time he'll know the nuances of like, oh, no, that's not how that power works. Wait, what? And then you got to go back and argue with him for 20 minutes. But he's not here tonight to defend himself, so I can make jokes like that. Yeah, I don't know. But I think that's one of the reasons you see them all running their community guidelines is because it's, well, in my experience, it's like a policy and a work instruction, right?
I mean, that's, to me, from an outside looking in, it's sort of like, well, put the shock collar on and we'll zap you when you go too far.
Yeah, you're right, because you don't know what the rules are.
No. And
they can change them on a moment's notice.
Yeah. And same with this whole, you know, some doctor. I didn't follow it all, man. It's just too much. Like, it with the Wu flu crap and doctors coming out going, one set of doctors said, well, you're going to die from it. Another set of doctors say, you're not going to die from it. Kids can't get it. Blah, blah, blah. So sick. And then Google, Facebook, fucking YouTube, all of them just go, and that person's gone. How dare you dissent? You know? How dare you put out something that is another point of view?
Well, these guys are all terrified that the government's going to come in and change the laws and that they're going to be held responsible for this stuff. I think that's step one. So they're trying to do the self-policing, and I think they're going overboard with it.
Especially it's either because, all allowed or none of it's allowed.
Right. And I think what it is, you have some who are trying to do, I think partially it's they're wanting to try to be I don't know, what would you call it, you know, socially responsible or whatever the term is, politically correct. They want to be politically correct because, you know, that's the, what would you say, the milieu, however
well,
you say that
it's,
word.
Man,
but I think a lot almost, of them are just trying to appease to get people to leave them alone.
It's almost the same as these companies are like, whoa, don't attack us. We're going to put speech codes in. That way we're compliant across the board. I'm like, what? And everyone's cheering this speech code for corporations and stuff like that. Have you not realized what you've just done? You've just made HR's job so easy to fire you. You have no recourse now. Well, Bob looked at Jenny. Jenny felt uncomfortable, and that's why Bob had to go. But really, we just didn't like Bob. He didn't want to play the company softball team. He went home on a Friday night, didn't go to the bar with the boys. Yeah, I say fuck Bob. That's the only reason I can see these people cheering a speech code in a corporation. You're losing any of your protections that, and God, I hate to say this, that the unions fought for and won. For you not to be just dismissed on a whim because your boss didn't like the colored shirt you wore. Oh.
Well, and it's people who don't understand the consequences of their actions, right?
And that's what, at the end of the day, I've been scratching my head going, this revolution is happening from the top down. It's coming from, oh shit, now I know why. This is 100% crush any dissent of any company. But, oh well, you don't like what's happening at Google? Fuck off. We'll get another dude in. You know what I mean? It's just a way for corporate to hire and fire on a whim now. There's no more where you see a wrongful dismissal case. You'll never see one of them again. Well, he broke our community speech code.
Well, and DPView brings up an interesting point. He's saying, he said in the IRC, I'm pretty sure self-policing helps keep competitors off, which... Partially, I think it's more that, you know, since you've got these big platforms going hardcore and you don't know what the rules are, you start seeing smaller platforms spin up and people say, oh, no, we'll honor free speech. You know, as long as it's not illegal, we can put whatever you want kind of thing, right? And then these sites get shut down because, oh, look, you're harboring hate speech. And then, bang, gone. And when they started shutting down... we talked about it when they went after both, the Daily Stormer. Then they went to Alex Jones, and now it's just anybody who's wrong. Thing they opened the door when I mean now, admittedly, they went after at least they went after the real white supremacists first, right? But you know, as
which
opposed
one?
Well, I mean, Stormer, Daily Stormer, right?
How many times you read Daily Stormer?
Never.
Exactly.
In fact, I didn't even know they had a website till it got shut down. I mean, if you had asked, I would have assumed they had one, but I'd like, you know, never saw evidence of it.
Every time someone pointed to the Storm bags, I'd run over and have a look. And I'm like, this is satire. It's got to be. And then I look now at some of the shit coming out of the Black Lives Matter about melanated people being the superior creature, that whites are just defective. I'm like, fucking hell, there are people who really believe this shit. This shit is actually real. I mean, I thought it was just a bunch of LARPing fuckwits, but these are people who keep, six-figure jobs. And they're running around with ideas like this. I'm like, fucking hell. How do you...
I don't know how you square that. I don't.
I don't know, man. It just seems like it's really speeding up. The stupidity is really speeding up.
Well, like I said, when they first started shutting down speech they didn't like, you opened the door.
There's a couple of big faggot communists on YouTube. They're still allowed to be on there for some God knows reason, but... I think the channels are retarded. They should be allowed on there. That was a wrong choice of word. Watching them try to contort themselves around this idea that... so you get this fat white dude who espouses communism. And he's going, well, she meant melanated people He couldn't go through it.
He had nowhere to go with it.
But he didn't want to deny it. Yeah, he didn't want to deny it, though. He didn't want to denounce. I'm like, so these people are storm fags now? Like, is just a different color? And I don't know, man. I'm just...
You born. Open the door for whoever screams the loudest to get something shut down. That's when, you know, the whole canceled but thing.
They're yelling the most retarded shit, and no one will go, what? Hang on a minute. Because everyone's shit scared.
Well, I mean, it's like that video they had of the chick in front of the, what was it called? Chaz or Chop or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, whatever.
Where the guy, you know, they said, oh no, this is an anti-white zone or something like that. And the guy was like, oh no, I'm just going to go in to take some pictures. And she just started screaming. The moment he said anything, you know, because he was trying to just go in there and film, right?
Yeah.
And the moment he said anything in response, she just started screaming. And the video, and of course the video cut off after about 10 seconds. She kept screaming the whole fucking time. And it's like, that's the person you're letting decide that something should or shouldn't be allowed? That mentality? I mean, it's dangerous.
The iconic video is definitely the young lady, very well-to-do, very nice clothes, good, nice hair, screaming just absolute obscenities at the cops. And the cops just go, go away. Go away.
And, user, you know, joined your channel.
Stop yelling. And this woman gets up in the cop's face and just screams, oh, fucking what? And the supervisor in the back goes, she's going. They just grab her, man. And suddenly the meats just hit the road, you know what I mean? She's like, oh, shit. This isn't screaming at my stepdad. These guys are taking me away. And the screams of terror, man, like a fucking two-year-old not getting a second scoop of ice cream. It was amazing.
In reality, suddenly hit her right in the face.
Oh, damn right. And I saved probably one of the most iconic photos I've seen that no one's really promoting yesterday of state. I think those state troopers. They just had police written on their vests. One was carrying a very, very good-looking sniper rifle. And the other one was clearly the spotter. And when you look closely at their clothing, they had been lying down somewhere at some point because they had roof that had concrete dust all over them. So, I'm not sure why they deployed snipers, but there's going to be a reason for it. And fuck, I hope to find out why.
Do you know, where the U.S. usually has their name tags on police officers' uniforms?
From what I understand, name tags have all been removed and just numbers
for the federals.
Now.
So if just you've seen numbers. That, that wasn't a state police officer, that was federal, either ATF, marshals, FBI, somebody that's been pulled from the federal agency to police a state.
Well, thanks for waiting for me to introduce you, Madman. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking Kentucky Vanilla Barrel Cream Ale.
I got some of those. I think they're too sweet.
Yeah, I think they're all right.
All right.
But one reason they're being deployed sniper-wise, some cops are getting tired of being blinded. So they're being posted on top of certain federal buildings to take out laser pointers. Not to say that any laser pointer has been taken out thus far, but it is possible.
Is open.
So, Madman, we opened the discussion, which of course you didn't get to hear the clip, with the four tech CEOs giving their, you know, giving their WebEx to Congress, and specifically they had been asked if China was stealing technology, and
Zuckerberg's the only one that said yes.
Yeah.
As far as I know, they're doing that.
And then the guy from Alphabet turned around and said, yeah, we did have something happen in like 2009 that might have been the government. But we were going back and forth. It's like, are they wanting to get in bed with China and so just didn't want to say yes? Or did they not want to admit to a data breach?
They're already in bed with China and don't want to lose the revenue.
Yeah.
Zuckerberg may be a lizard man, and he might be part of an alien race attempting to take over the planet.
See, what did I say? Somebody needs to work with him on how to set up his camera.
He is the most free speech, and he's also the one that best sees the optics out of that group.
Yeah.
Because everyone in the U.S. and everyone worldwide already knows if you want to do business with China, you have to be in a partnership with a Chinese company. Every Chinese company has ties to the Chinese Communist Party. The CEOs of most of those companies had to be approved by the Select Committee, which is a committee in the Communist Party that just picks who the leaders in China are. Now, you have to show competence to get picked by them. They don't just choose straight-up idiots. And I think nepotism where it exists might not be rampant, but it's still there. So even if you're not directly working with somebody that has Admiral Wang Cho written on his shirt, Admiral Wang Cho is getting whatever tech that you're working on with that quote-unquote private company. And enough businesses worldwide have gone into China to know this. So just staying straight up is the best way to look for everyone outside of China. So Zuckerberg was thinking, how do I not look like an idiot to everyone not in China?
Well, he's also not had a lot of luck trying to get Facebook in China. So
he had the least to lose and the most to gain by not looking like an idiot. But all the rest of them, they just want the Chinese market. They know what's going on. That might be overly cynical. I'm sorry.
No,
I'm not. It's the truth.
I don't think you're being overly cynical.
Well, I think that's pretty much the conclusion we all came to.
That 2-minute soundbite was probably the best of the 6.5 hours. Who wants to hire a motorboat in the weekend, some cinder blocks, and go grab Nadler? Like, that fat little fuck. God damn, Jerry Nadler is a fucking retard.
You want to see something funny? Go find a picture of him from the late 80s, early 90s. He's about twice the size. And I'm not really in a position to be making fun of fat guys, but I mean, he looks like somebody took a bike pump to him or the Dig Dug guy or something. I don't get him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not just mocking his looks. I'm mocking his fucking whole thought process.
What you remember, violent protests are a myth, right?
Exactly, you know. And then,
you know, never mind all the live video. You know, Jerry Nadler like versus 1080p video. Go.
Like 4.5, nearly 5 hours into this, and Barr has been sitting at that table answering questions from these smug fucking children that just dragged him in there to beat the shit out of him.
And break how rude he was.
Yeah, and he requests a 5-minute bathroom break. And Nadler just scolds him, goes, no, can't. And it was only after he was like, I'd just like to remind the chair that you were 45 minutes late after a car accident, and I waited for you, sir. Yeah, and he's like fucking shamed him into giving him a 5-minute bathroom break after 4.5 hours of questioning.
That was a different different committee.
Yeah, that was the interview with Bob. Dude, there are so many Senate committees going on right now, I don't know what the fuck's happening. I can't keep up with them. Hmm.
And those are both House committees meeting.
Give me a pass, Madman. It's American politics, and I'm Australian. Trying to keep up here.
That was
the
real
class act. There are you. It's fine.
Fixing it. That's just fixing the problems.
Yeah. No,
we don't want to do any. I don't want to have to type any rescissions. And
feel free to correct, man, and I'll retract if I get it wrong. But
what I thought was hilarious watching the tech. Interview is both sides were going after them. The Democrats were going after them because they wanted to take their money and possibly their businesses. And then the Republicans were going after them just saying, please just treat us all like we're assholes.
Yeah.
Just don't show favoritism. Treat them like assholes. Treat us like assholes. Treat us like the same quality of asshole.
Only
now, we think 4 years ago, you treated their asshole better than you treated our asshole. Can you not do that? Can you promise not to do that? Can you promise not to help their asshole or hinder our asshole? Yeah. But I thought that was kind of funny. Just the depictions where you can piss off everyone in the country just for different reasons. Piss off half of them because you're rich, and piss off the other half because you're evil.
Well, I don't have time to splice it. I was going to try to get from Spaceballs. Keep firing, assholes!
Anyway, let's move on.
So, anyways. Yeah. So, first article tonight is from Android Headlines. Garmin is subject to a $10 million ransom demand from hackers, according to Cycling Weekly. It has been confirmed that the company was the victim of a ransomware attack last week. Garmin had just expanded its range of solar-powered adventure smartwatches. Adventure smartwatch. I don't, that just doesn't, those, that string of words doesn't seem to go together for some reason. So this could not have come at a worse time. Reports also suggest that reports of ransomware are likely to occur more regularly and have larger impact on business. This is potentially a demonstration of just how serious ransomware and hacking can be. The Wasted Locker ransomware hit Garmin's network on Thursday, July the 23rd, when an employee pointed out that they first noticed something was wrong when arriving at work that day. In response to the problem faced, Garmin IT tried to shut down all their computers on the system. However, they were unable to do this successfully. Instead, they instructed employees to shut down all the computers that they had access to. Okay, you know that's pretty bad when they're actually telling everybody, turn it off. Just turn it the fuck off.
Just turn it off.
Rumors and reports suggest that the hackers are demanding $10 million as ransom from Garmin. However, this is yet to be confirmed by an official source. Garmin issued an apology on Saturday, July 25th, for the power outage. Well, it's not power, it's data. It's a different thing. This outage has now gone on for 3 days, and there is no indication of when it will come back online. The company said, "We want to extend our sincerest apologies for the inconvenience to the outage has caused our customers." Currently, Garmin believes that no personal data has been compromised. The company has also responded to a number of frequently asked questions on its website. This should hopefully alleviate some user fears. However, understandably, many will be feeling anxious about the situation. Garmin has also said that once its systems are back online, users' activity data should not be lost. In theory, it will have been stored on their devices and will then be uploaded when they are able to sync it with an online system. Fortunately, not everything has been compromised by the breach. It seems that InReach SOS and messaging features have not been affected. These continue to be operational despite all the other systems being down. However, most products and devices are affected by the breach. Cyclists using Garmin Edge units, as well as runners and other athletes who wear Garmin watches, are all unable to access Garmin systems. The breach also is likely to affect Stravia users and other SatNav devices. Garmin is also unable to operate call centers and customer service online chat services. So, yeah, they're hard down. And
the way they make their adventure watches, Morps, is they take a picture of Dean and put it on one model, and a picture of Hank and put it on the other model. And in positive news, Garmin still exists. I thought they went out of business when all of the cell phones got GPS.
So Garmin's down altogether.
Their online services are. I'm sure the devices are still working. That's one of the nice things about GPS.
I was
going to
say, because I have a Garmin GPS in my car. Like, fuck.
Don't try to update it.
I haven't updated it since I bought it. Dude, sometimes I'm driving out in the ocean on that thing. Fucking great.
Some of their smaller devices, wouldn't they not work without the internet? I mean, there's not much space on a watch or anything.
Depends on the device. I don't know.
I wonder if Garmin got complacent with their security because they weren't a big name anymore.
They could be that. It could just be somebody with a lot of access fucked up and clicked the wrong link. I mean, if you knew the amount of phishing emails I see every day, I mean, it's
oh, no doubt.
It's amazing how many of them go out. And some of them, I mean, some of them, if you're not a trained eye, I don't know how you catch them. right?
Oh, spearfishing?
Like, oh, yeah. I mean, I got one today that was a attempted spearfish for me. Like, somebody did some digging, which I was surprised at. And they were, you know, because they I found out what it was later, but they knew information about our internal team and that we had been, you know, filling some positions, which we'd already filled. It's like, oh, yeah, here's a resume. And it's like, you know, if it weren't for the fact that the resume is in a zip file and ends in .m, there's no indication that that thing was a fish. It looked like somebody legitimately trying to send a resume because it looked like they knew somebody who worked there.
Well, you always, we're always in the habit of reading what we're about to click on first, right?
Yeah. And the reason I noticed it is because it's like, why did they send a .m? Oh, for anybody who's not aware, that's a Word document with macros. A lot of times Microsoft Word won't even open macros if the file format's not a .m anymore. Doesn't mean you can't put macros in other Word documents, but that's one that's explicitly got it in there. And it's like, that's the only indication that, you know, it's a zipped up document and it's got a .m in it. And it's like, what? I mean, and I found out what it was later. It was somebody testing the phishing system for, you know, they've got a training system. They were testing a new module for spear phishing. And so they decided to use me without letting me know. So.
Nice.
And then when I said, hey, you guys need to check this. Yeah, thanks. And then later my boss said, you know, they're mad at you. I'm like, why? Well, you were supposed to click the link. Well, why would I have clicked that? That was a fish. They were trying to get a macro. They were trying to get malware on my system. She goes, no, they were trying to test the phishing system. It's like, well, if it's a test, why didn't they tell me? Oh.
Or why didn't they send it to, I don't know, a customer service rep?
Well, they wanted to keep it on the security team because they were still testing the software. And I get that. But it's like, if you're testing the software, you could have just told me and I would have clicked the link for you. Right? But no.
Nah, man.
They thought they were going to get me. And they were mad.
They wanted to point. They wanted to point and laugh.
Uh-huh.
That's all that was, dude. That was a point and laugh moment. Because you've been fucking with their shit last time. 2 weeks ago, remember? They wanted some open fucking thing to the internet.
Oh, different team. But yeah, I mean,
okay.
I'm developing a reputation for bluntness.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, yeah, I am kind of a blunt force instrument. I mean, that's just, I can't help it. I don't even mean to do that. I just do. So, but it's not, you know, that's the thing is, and, you know, of course, the hackers want $10 million, and there's no guarantee if you pay them, you're even going to get your systems back. So.
Well, good luck, Garmin.
And the fact that they've been hard down this long means they don't have a good backup strategy.
They don't have any backup, yeah.
But this type of attack is pretty much the only good defense is having backups?
No, there's multiple layers of defense against this. Not having seen the actual attack that Garmin hit, but since they're saying it was ransomware, the usual means of ransomware is very similar to the email I was just talking about. You send somebody a document with macros in it, or they spoof like, oh, it's going to our encrypted document service. Click this link to go get your document. Right. They like to forge DocuSign and other things like that. And, you know, there's a couple of different ways to get in, but the usual scuttlebutt is you do some kind of a phishing attack to get the target user to usually click on a link and then attempt to log in, thinking that they're logging into one of their company's systems, usually an email system. Or to retrieve a file. And of course, it's a phishing site, so they can then get in with that person's credentials and start abusing their email account. And once they do that, from there it's a game of escalation. The other thing they can do is if they can get you to click a link or run a macro, they'll infect the computer with malware. And depending on the kind of malware, it might contain a worm and start trying to spread, right? So usually if they can get it onto if they get it on a user's machine, usually it'll start encrypting like network shares and shit that the user has access to, and start trying to spread itself to other computers that the user might have access to. A lot of your end users anymore, though, they'll have access to their workstation and that's about it. So the other thing they'll do is if they can get in and compromise a web page. So it could be that Garmin had some vulnerability in one of their web services or web platforms, right? Where the bad guys could then get in through that vulnerability, get code execution on a server, and then use that to start manually spreading their ransomware inside the company so that they can then issue some sort of a trigger. And, you know, anymore, there's so many different means of command and control for malware. A lot of times, you know, it used to be they'd all check into an IRC server and you could issue commands that way. That's fairly easy to watch for. Most companies block the protocol. So nowadays they do things like register a text record on some crazy ass DNS entry somewhere. So they'll go register a domain name that looks like somebody rolled a potato across the keyboard, right? And there'll be some some hashed entry in a text record on that domain. And when that entry changes, that can be the trigger to launch, you know, shit like that. And a Twitter account, right?
What date did they announce the hack?
25th, I want to say. Is that what I said? What did they say on the story? They had it in there when it hit.
Yeah, just listen to the date.
Let me find it again. July 23rd.
Yeah, okay. So from... Okay, someone knew on Wednesday the 22nd. That Garmin got hit. Because Garmin was sitting at over $100 a share. $101 a share on the Tuesday. When 23rd, when they announced $100 a share, and then it tanked out down to $96 a share on the 24th. Someone had an inside running and dumped some stock.
You think? Well, and that's the other thing that'll happen with these hacking groups, too, is they sometimes will trick or coerce somebody who works for the company into installing the malware. It's like, you know, hey, we're going to tank the stock. We'll you know, if you help us do this, we'll tell you when so you can sell it off.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
I mean, it just seems suspicious.
A lot of times they'll go for the flat out, hey, we'll give you $10,000 if you go install this disk in your server farm. Now, whether they ever actually get paid or not, who knows, but...
Yeah, they're going back up again, though.
Oh, I'm sure they'll eventually fix it, but, you know, how long are they going to be down? How much lost business? I don't know.
Then, how much trust in brand have you lost?
Oh, yeah, reputational damage is absolutely a thing.
Big one.
And I mean, depending on the industry you're in, when you're something like Garmin, where you're probably selling GPS. Actually, now that I think about it, I bet a good chunk of their business is probably selling GPS to other companies to include in devices, right? So we were just talking about how GPS is in all the phones. You want to bet they've licensed that GPS license from somebody, that radio.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that's a good chunk of their business. And... Yeah, so they'll get it back up. They might lose some user data in the process. They might lose all the data and have to spin it up from scratch. Who knows? Whatever the last backup is. Go back to the tapes. Backup tapes. Some companies still use them. And they do work.
Remember when we fired Bill for talking about off-site storage of data? Remember that stupid idea Bill had?
Yeah, we probably should have done that.
Yeah.
Next article is from soundguys.com, actually. And it's headphones are collecting too much personal data. which I thought this one was hilarious. Trading personal data for useful software features is nothing new, but do we really need them in headphones? One of the biggest ongoing debates in tech right now is regarding privacy. There's a lot of money in data aggregation, and while companies like Google have done a decent job at showing how all of that data can be put to a practical use, i.e. the assistant, others don't seem to be making a stronger case. This became apparent when the author was reviewing the Soul Run Free Pro, I don't know who names these things, I guess they just got a word scrabble, fitness earbuds, which come with an associated app to help the users get the most out of them. Granted, the earbuds in question are marketed to runners and are supposed to provide exceptional biometric data and feedback to help improve everything from your posture to your gait. Well, they got gyroscopics in the headphones. So I was expecting to have to accept a privacy policy or two. That said, the author found himself hitting accept too many times. Eventually, he decided that it was to actually read what he was agreeing to. Besides the usual information like the access to height, weight, age, and sex, the app also requested a few unique bits of information. Some of the additional information the app collects includes things like leg length, the shoes you wear, whether you are right or left footed. Weird, but not completely unrelated. It is technically a running app. Plus, the entire shtick of the headphones is that they've partnered with a company called B-Flex Inc. to provide you with next-level information about your workouts. And then they've got a picture of everything you're agreeing to share there. And, okay, that's the same text. They also noted that it would collect wellness-related information, such as alcohol usage, injury history, and eventually, and menstruation history. yeah. So basically the guy kept digging and he found a bunch of these headphone apps are doing this shit. You know, Bose is doing it for their headphones. You know, they're tracking everything you listen to on them. I mean, it's kind of like, what? So again, just kind of pointing out these companies are really getting aggressive with the data collection. It's nothing we didn't know. But, I mean, even in the flipping Bluetooth headphones at this point, right? So, if you don't absolutely have to have an app to use your Bluetooth headphones, and some do. You know, I've got a pair of the Bose Bluetooth headphones. And, yeah, the first thing you do is go in there and turn off all the data collection because you can at least opt out of it, assuming those sliders work. That's always the question, right? Is it really working or not? But you actually can't set up a bunch of things. I mean, once the headphones are set up, I guess you can uninstall the app. But getting them set up, you actually have to install it because you have to activate them, basically. Once you do that, they're Bluetooth headphones, right? And in fact, since I switched phones, I haven't bothered to reinstall the thing. But yeah, when I first got them on my other phone, I had to install this app to get them set up. So I don't
know. That is retarded.
It's obnoxious is what it is. Sort of like the Windows install where they won't... If it's on the internet, you know, I reinstalled Windows on one of my laptops a couple of months ago, and it, like, I forgot to, when it saw a Wi-Fi chip, you know, it got internet access, and I couldn't kill that internet access till setup was done, and it was not going to let me install Windows without logging into a Microsoft account. It even had a little box on there saying, oh, you can unlink it later. It's like, right, after they've already associated with it with an account, no matter what. I ended up strategically resetting my router when I was clicking on buttons on the install to say, nope, no internet. Let me go through and make a local account. So it's getting harder and harder to... Well, I've got a whole other thing I'm working on, just a philosophy set in the background. But all of these companies are moving towards the usage model of you don't own your data, and for all practical purposes, you rent the hardware. So it's like it's not even your hardware. You just pick up a device and sign into it, right? But, of course, they've got all your data. And, you know, is that such a bad thing or not? Well, depending on what they do with it, especially when you have companies that can't secure it, and shit like Garmin where, oh, one company gets hit with malware. How many devices, like you were saying, Madman, how many of these devices just don't work right now because they don't have an internet connection or at least don't work like they should?
Yeah, and it's even worse when not only does the device that I paid you money for not work, that's not their fault. They are a victim of a crime. But they've exposed me to risk that I'm not accepting when I buy a smartwatch that's supposed to help me navigate in the woods and tell me the time. I'm not saying, oh, and put all of my usernames and passwords at risk. So a lot of this data collection, I think we need to come up with some liability laws where they are liable for paying everyone that they have data on a substantial fee for any damages caused.
Make it absurdly expensive so they take it seriously kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, they either need to stop collecting data or take data security very serious. And I think the bar for damages, like proving damages, should be pretty low, such as, has my account been breached? Because the fact is, I'm not going to know if there's any damage, possibly for years. It's how long does it take them to actually attempt to use my data for something? So your business might not even be around when I'm finally the victim. So you lost my data? You owe me $1,000. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but if you have 1 million customers and you owe each one of those 1 million customers $1,000 automatically without them even needing to sue you, you're going to pay attention.
Yeah.
Because that will bankrupt most businesses. Like Apple could take that hit, but most companies aren't Apple.
Yeah, Apple could take
Google might be able to take that hit.
I don't know that Garmin could.
So the companies that could take that hit don't want to, and the rest of them can't. So they will either stop collecting information that isn't necessary for their actual product, and then start doing what companies used to do, which is instead of selling your information to someone, sell you something. So if it costs another, if they have to do a subscription to keep updating my watch, charge me the subscription and have that as part of their business model, or just say you have the info that's on your watch when you buy it and you had to buy any updates. But this whole I'm collecting your shit and exposing you to risk, that's fucking retarded.
You got anything
on
that?
I think that could work. I'm just trying to think, but is it gonna hurt anyone starting up? And then I'm like, well, if they're not collecting shit they don't need, shouldn't hurt them.
And I know there's going to be coming up with an argument of, what do you not need? Well, you can say you need anything, just know, whenever there's a breach, you're going to be paying people money.
Well, but
so you're going to have to prove that whatever you lost can't be used to hurt someone.
Well, and continuing that same trend, though, if you're talking about somebody coming up, you're talking about somebody building a new system from scratch. Well, if you know what the rules are from the outset, you'll know to build, make it secure from the get-go because you can't afford to take that hit, right?
Yeah.
So, because that's the problem we have a lot of times, and certainly a problem I deal with in my professional life, is you have a lot of systems and coding guys who don't think security is important or they don't think it's their problem. It's like, oh, no, you have a security team. It's their problem. It's like, but you're writing shit code. It's like, well, you're the one who has to secure it. You deal with it. It's like, why don't you not write shit code? But, yeah. You know.
And the circle starts all over again.
Dude, you have no idea. But
this is an argument that'll happen to the end of fucking time.
I actually had an AWS developer try to grab my keyboard because I had access to make changes he didn't. And he wanted to make something public. It had credit scores in it. It's like, no, that's illegal. And, you know, he actually tried to grab my keyboard to make the change because I refused to do it.
That's where the wiffle bat would have come out.
Well, I logged into the system to see what he was talking about. And when he saw I had the global admin rights in there, he literally just said, oh, here, I'll do it. And just, you know, tried to shove me out of the way and grab my keyboard. Now, he was not a very large person, so he was not successful in shoving me out of the way. But it was like, what the fuck are you doing? He does know that
he's not doing it whenever he's doing it under your credentials. If he's doing it under your credentials, you are the one doing it.
Well, like I said, he wasn't large enough to physically move me, but he tried. And it's like, what the fuck? I actually dragged him into my boss's office. I'm like, you explain this shit right now.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting conversation, let me tell you. So it's like you can't do that. It's like, well, you're going to make us spend 6 more months in coding to get all this fixed. It's like, well, I'm not making you do shit. You designed it wrong. I'm not letting you put a car on the road that has cinder blocks for tires. You know, shit.
You
like
mightn't,
that.
But I will, because I just want to laugh.
Well. Anyways, next article. Oh, fuck, we've been jawing too long. I've got to get moving. I've got 3 more articles to get through and Dojo. Disney, Microsoft, you know, continuing the trend of don't trust companies, Disney, Microsoft, Nintendo, and 50 more hit by a massive source code leak. More than 50 high-profile companies have had their software source code made freely available online, partly as a result of incorrectly configured infrastructure. Software source code belonging to household names such as Adobe, Microsoft, Lenovo, Qualcomm, AMD, Motorola, GE Appliances, Nintendo, Disney, Daimler, Roblox, and many other companies were collected and placed in an online repository. Appearing to be, this may be related to a huge dump of Nintendo source code that started appearing online on June 24th. Tom's Guide could not confirm a link because the Nintendo data seems to be removed from the GitLab repository of company code at the heart of the story. However, the hacker who posted some of these files has explained the provenance of the Nintendo source code. They've added a bit at the end of the story. According to a report by Bleeping Computer, the leaked code was collected by Swiss software developer Tilty Kotman and put under the names XO Confidential and Confidential and Proprietary in a GitLab repository that could be accessed by anyone. Kotman amassed a large bulk of source code by scanning third-party sources and misconfigured DevOps appliances. The leaks affected a broad variety of companies from tech giants to retailers. A pseudonymous security researcher Bank Security estimates that more than 50 firms had their source code made available in the repo. The source code was related to over 50 companies and been leaked and posted on a public repository. In some cases, these are hard-coded credentials. Bank Security posted a list of the affected companies on Pastebin, and it is safe to view that list. Bleeping Computer pointed out that within Kotman's repository, source code from organizations in industries such as fintech, banks, gaming, and identity and access management software was also published online. Kotman explained to Bleeping Computer that they, Kotman identifies as non-binary, okay.
What has that got to do with shit?
It's the person who put up the repository either virtue signaling or trying to throw a distraction out there so that they won't, you know, badmouth them because they're not normal. Get that politics in there. Had come across hard-coded credentials in the repositories, but took steps to stop them from being abused. I try to do my best to prevent any major things resulting directly from my releases. Hard-coded credentials have generally been stripped in the releases of best effort basis. While Kotman doesn't report the leaks to the affected companies at the time, they said they will respond to takedown notices and ensure this information isn't used to cause further damage. If it's copied, how do you have any control over... Yeah, right. Okay. It's likely that the Daimler AG and Lenovo issued such requests as the former doesn't appear in the repository anymore, and the latter simply has a folder with nothing in it. Some companies probably don't even know that their source code has ended up in an online public repository. Tom's Guide is not providing a link to Kotman's GitLab repository, as doing so would be questionable both ethically and legally, but it can be found by scrolling through this person's tweets. Losing control of source code on the internet is like handing the blueprints of a bank to the robbers. Blah, 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 blah. So Kotman reached out to Tom's Guide concerning the Nintendo code. The Nintendo gig leaks did not originate from me, Kotman wrote. We simply reshare some popular leaks in our Telegram channel and repackage them in more. So they just reposted them. They didn't actually get them. But so when they're talking about incorrectly configured DevOps applications, the trend for modern architectures, cloud-based stuff, is you script all of your And DPViews already get the link in the RC for anybody who wants to see the leak. Good job, dude. So the trend nowadays is to write scripts that deploy your virtual machines, your containers, your web apps, and then have those scripts also do the configuration and linking them up to your backend databases and stuff like that. And so there's source code repositories, there's job schedulers, you know, stuff like Jenkins. There's a ton of them out there. But I'm trying to think of the Adobe one, because they're not Adobe. Apache. There's an Apache one that's real popular. I can't think of it. But anyways, so a lot of times these DevOps platforms, these security components are one of the ones that the companies that write that software sell. So it's like, you know, the open source version of it is, or the community version of it works, but if you want to lock it down, secure it, do version control and shit like that, you usually have to buy the professional version of it. Well, when you're in a large organization, getting the budget approved to go buy software is sometimes a nightmare. So it doesn't surprise me that your development teams are just grabbing the open source ones and using it and maybe not realizing that it's not secure or not caring because it's not their job. They think, well, we've got a security team. They should be securing it. Did you tell the security team that you were building it? No, because they would have told us not to. Then how are they supposed to secure it? I don't know. That's their problem. And yes, I've had that conversation. Well, why didn't you all lock it down? Because you didn't tell us you built it. Well, if we told you we were going to build it, you wouldn't have let us. So how could we have secured it? Well, you should have. That's your job. Your security. I mean, you're stuck in that, you know, logic loop of how am I supposed to secure something when I don't know you have it? You know.
Hello, sir. Before we continue with this argument, I have to know. Are you fucking retarded? Because this is essential to how we continue. Because either you are intelligent enough to have this conversation, or we need to replace you because you're fucking retarded.
So, Madman, I'm just going to ask, of the fucking retarded that you've interacted with, how many of them, and are you, it's not a fair question, I'm not asking you this one, how many of them would self-identify as members of the fucking retarded?
One. I had one person that honestly said, I don't know what I'm doing and I can't learn. And I'm like, you are probably one of the wisest people here. You've admitted you don't know what you're doing, but I assure you, you can learn what I'm about to teach you, because this job that I'm going to have you do is one step below retarded. So you can do it. You just need to know how to do it, and I need to know how to explain it to you. How best do you learn? Do you learn by doing? Do you learn by observing? Do you learn by hearing? But the people that will admit to their stupidity, Aristotle would call them one of the wisest people among us. But very few people wish to admit to their ignorance. Well, I guess I was using ignorance and retarded interchangeably, but this dude just he didn't want to admit responsibility was the problem you're having, and the only way around that is to make an example and just let everyone else know the reason he was fired isn't because he did something dumb, it's because he refused to take responsibility and he refused to communicate with people that could have prevented this from happening. Because I do believe everyone will make a mistake. Just need to talk to people and be open with any of your departments that you need to work with. But I've taken management classes and I would like to think I'm a reasonable human being.
So, yeah. Anyways.
Is that... Your arguments usually boil down to that's how Netflix does it?
Oh, you're reading the IRC. Yeah, DPView is talking about how he does both security and DevOps. And you know, it can be done. And I wish I had some security-minded people on our DevOps team. I mean, I'd be willing to move over to the DevOps team if that's what it took, but I've actually got some people who actively dislike security because we just get in the way. We don't do real work. And when I try to get them to justify why they feel the need to spin up a microservice for every function call, and why do we need 500 Docker containers for a small web app that has about 600 users? We don't need a Docker container for every user. And his answer was, well, that's how Netflix does it. It's like, we're not Netflix! So, yeah, it's a constant fight. And I actually don't know how that guy still has a job, to be honest. He says the dumbest shit and yells at people all the time. So, anyways, yeah, it's a thing. I've got a whole thing I'm working on that basically is going to boil down to, you know, it's okay to trust companies with your data when you understand what you're doing. It's like when you understand what you're sharing with these companies and what the ramifications of that are, and the problem is nobody does. So
that, and knowing what they're collecting about you.
Well,
if they're collecting everything, then there's no way to know whether or not you should trust them.
That's right. I mean, there's nothing to make that basis off of right now. So,
I trust Steam with a bit more of my information than I trust a Bose Bluetooth headset, because I'm not going to be purchasing stuff through my Bose Bluetooth headset.
And Bose is very upset about that, by the way.
Steam, I buy stuff from them. They've earned my trust by not giving erroneous charges to my credit card.
Well, then you've probably had a pretty long-term relationship with Steam. You've probably been using that service for a long time.
Yeah, and they let me know what they're keeping, and I'm like, this is safe. I know which account is attached to this, so I know if I want to be paranoid, this account isn't my account with a lot of money, just doesn't get attached to my Steam account. Woohoo! They have information, and I have security on my end.
So, anyways, next article. This one's from TorFreak.com. The Internet Archive has filed its answer and affirmative defense in response to a copyright infringement lawsuit filed by a group of publishers. Among other things, Internet Archives that believes that its work is protected under the doctrine of fair use and the safe harbor provisions of the DMCA. Back in March, the Internet Archive launched its National Emergency Library. Built on its existing open library, the NEL aimed to assist displaced learners with initially unlimited access to more than a million books. Already angered by the activities of the open library, major publishers Hachette, HarperCollins, John Wiley, and Penguin Random House responded by filing a massive copyright infringement lawsuit against the Internet Archive. In their complaint, the publishers equated the libraries to pirate services, stating that they had no right to scan books and lend them out. Claiming direct and secondary copyright infringement, they demanded millions of dollars in statutory damages. In June, IA founder Brewster Kahle called on the publishers to make peace, but with no public sign of that happening, the lawsuit is progressing. This week, the most significant responsive document so far appeared on the docket, detailing Internet Archive's answer to the complaint and its affirmative defenses. It begins with a lengthy opening statement, in which in part seeks to highlight synergies between the now warring factions. Like plaintiffs, the Internet Archive believes that books are a cornerstone of our culture and system of democratic self-government, and play a critical role in education. Accordingly, democratizing access to information and facilitating access to books in particular has been a core part of the Internet Archive's mission for decades, it reads. But for many people, distance, time, cost, or disability pose daunting and sometimes insurmountable barriers to accessing physical books. Digitizing and offering books online for borrowing unlocks them for communities with limited or no access, creating a lifeline to trusted information. The statement spends time explaining the process of CDL, controlled digital lending, noting that the Internet Archive provides a digital alternative to traditional libraries carrying physical books. As such, it possesses no new harm to authors or the publishing industry. Not only that, CDL, as practiced by the Internet Archive, is entirely legal, the defendants argue. Yeah, actually, a lot of libraries use that.
Yes, I was about to say, my public library has its own little app I can download onto my phone, and then it lets me check out, I think, 4 books on it at a time. And I can check out so many audiobooks as well.
The thing that it's going on in the background, too, is that checkout system is keeping count because it knows that they have X number of copies of that book in stock, right? So they may have 10 copies of that book. And when the 11th person comes along to check out, it's actually going to tell them that, I'm sorry, that book's not available right now. Try again, you know, in a couple of days or whatever. I know that because my grandmother made extensive use of the same library where you are, Madman. And I had to help her set some things up on it, and she kept running into that because she was, I guess, going for some stuff they didn't have a lot of copies of.
I did not know that. I figured they'd still let the physical ones go out.
Oh, yeah, they do. But, I mean, they have a certain amount of digital copies they let out at a time.
Okay.
That way it's not infringing on copyright because they're not making, I mean, okay, you're making copies of it. But, you know, functionally, because the copies they're making expire after a while, they're only letting so many of it out at a time so that it's functioning like a traditional library. Right?
Yeah.
So... the Internet Archive has made careful efforts to ensure that its uses are lawful. The Internet Archive CDL program is sheltered by fair use doctrine, buttressed by traditional library protections. Specifically, the project serves the public interest in preservation, access, and research, all classic fair use purposes, the IA's answer reads. As for its effect on the market for the works in question, the books have already been bought and paid for by the libraries that own them. The public derives tremendous benefit from the program, and the rights holders will gain nothing if the public is deprived of this resource. In addition, the usual laundry list of responses to various claims and allegations made in the complaint, the Internet Archive ultimately arrives at the meat of its answer. In its first affirmative defense, IA argues that the complaint fails to stake a claim. In other words, even if the allegations of the complaint were found to be true, they are insufficient to establish a cause of action. As expected, IA's second affirmative defense centers on fair use, arguing that even with the publisher's copyrighted material were used, such use is protected under the law. Furthermore, IA argues that the plaintiff's claims are barred in whole in part, by the first sale doctrine, including under 17 U.S.C. Section 109. Perhaps unsurprisingly, given the claims of copyright infringement in the Internet Archive's positive responses to takedown notices, the answer states that IA is also protected in whole or in part by 17 U.S.C. Section 502C, commonly known as the Safe Harbor Provisions of the Copyright Act. Their affirmative defenses state that the publishers are not entitled to statutory damages because IA believes that the use of the copyrighted content was covered by fair use, while the complaint... the complaint founders due to the statute of limitations and the doctrine of latches. As previously reported, the Internet Archive's defense is being handled by California-based law firm Duri Tangri and is supported by a team at the EFF. So, yeah, I guess I had missed the story where they were getting sued earlier this year. And although we did talk about the National Emergency Library because I thought the name was funny, but... yeah, that's, I mean, I'm kind of wondering what all's in it.
If this is something that they're saying they've released to help college students, I wonder why Penguin's in on this. Don't they do fiction?
You know, I don't know.
Because
I think Penguin bought a bunch of publishers, so they probably got other things.
Well, I was thinking they did fiction, and the only reason I was thinking this is... I think his name's Larry Arm, the head of Hillsdale College.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a history textbook, but he couldn't get the publishers for most textbooks to look at it and publish it. So I think he went through Penguin because even though they don't generally publish textbooks, there's nothing preventing it. It's just they don't have it on staff, the people that normally double-check textbooks. But him being the head of a college and having access to professors is just like, I'll have professors from my college and other colleges examine it. They have transcripts, and they'll just write on the back, yeah, we double-checked the shit. And went through a fiction publisher to publish his textbook. But I was thinking, they wouldn't have a lot of grounds if all they do is fiction when it comes to lending out, I don't know, Math for Dummies.
Well, I'm scrolling through openlibrary.org, which is the website in question. They do have a lot more than textbooks. Like, there's Tom Clancy books, there's children's books.
Okay.
Freakonomics.
So it's just they were opening it up for students, but it's not just student stuff in there. Okay, I can see that now.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just trying to be a library. So, although I wonder if they have old versions. Now, that would be interesting. Like, get old versions of textbooks and compare them to new ones. Because that'd be fun to be able to use that to point out the scam publishers are doing, where they just reorder the chapters and reissue the new version of the book so that they can charge for it and people can't reuse the old ones.
Well, there's a lot of textbooks that you can go back and grab ones from the 1800s and they'll be just as valid. Like, math hasn't really changed. I think history, just because it would be out of date. And geography, because the maps have been rewritten. But the scientific method's still there. Thermodynamics was still being studied. Okay, not the 1800s, but early 1900s. As far as science for at least elementary and possibly even high school.
Well, it does make me wonder what kind of, you know, what all else they've got in that archive that... Yeah, I could see some publishers getting really upset if they're, if you know, usable textbooks are, you know, all over that thing, and you don't have to go purchasing textbooks all the time because that's a massive cost for.
Oh yeah, and if you're, when it comes to history, if you're doing like Western civilization, they usually have that broken up from the beginning of time to the Renaissance, and then the Renaissance to modern time. So the first half of that, you could find some old textbooks, and they'd probably still be very valid.
So, anyways, let's see. Need to stop digging through that. Go to our last story here because it is hilarious. This is from CNN.com. The British government is investing in a sex party startup. This is from London, CNN Business. The British government is investing £170,000 pounds, or a little over $221,000, in a company that throws sex parties. Killing Kittens, which organizes women-led adult parties in London and New York, said Wednesday that it has secured the investment from the UK government's Future Fund, which is designed to help startups survive the coronavirus pandemic. I never envisaged Boris as a sleeping partner, said the company CEO Emma Sale, referring to the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Killing Kittens has arrived on the digital scene and we're now pioneering the fastest growing adult social network in the world, she added. Sale founded Killing Kittens in 2005, organizing members-only masked parties. This is some Eyes Wide Shut shit right here. Oh. organizing members-only masked parties in executive venues with a focus on the pursuit of female pleasure, according to its website. It now has 180,000 members in 12 countries and recorded a 330% increase in traffic to its website during the coronavirus lockdown.
I can't go to a bar, so let's see if I can bang a hot check.
The pandemic forced the company to move all of its events and workshops online. Teledildonics? Are we getting into teledildonics here?
I don't know. If my penis isn't getting wet, they're not getting my membership fee.
Accelerating existing plans to enter the sex tech industry, a fast-growing sector that encompasses products and businesses focused on enhancing sexual experiences. The bulk of the UK government funds will be spent on marketing and product innovation, including a dating app. I thought those loans were supposed to be like for paying their people while they're on the coronavirus lockdown.
They're locked down working on this data app, dude.
Killing Kittens wants to compete against dating apps such as Match.com and Bumble, which has also seen an uptick in demand during coronavirus. And has I need the list again. I should be replacing it every time it shows up in this story. And it has plans to launch a digital advertising platform for lingerie and a sex toy company, as Haley said. Sex tech is one of the few industries that will come away from 2020 in a much better position, said Byrony Cole, founder of Sex Tech School, which teaches entrepreneurs and investors about the market. In particular, dating apps, sex toys, and porn are booming during the pandemic. We are searching for... We are searching online for more intimacy or ways to entertain ourselves, she told CNN Business. Organizers of CES, the world's biggest tech trade show, estimate definitely roughly a dozen sex tech companies presented innovations in this year's event in Las Vegas in January. One of these companies was Dame, a self-described sexual wellness company, which said Wednesday that its sales had more than doubled in the first half compared with a year ago. The company made headlines last year when it sued New York City Transit System after it rejected Dame's ads. Killing Kittens, which says it's valued at £11.5 million, based on previous funding rounds, recently raised £170,000 on crowdfunding platform SeedRS. Those proceeds were matched by the Future Fund, which provides loans between £125,000 and £5 million to companies subject to at least match funding from private investors. More than 800 businesses have accessed the fund since it launched in May, with nearly 513 million pounds in loans approved, according to figures from the UK Treasury. So, and there's another line at the end there, which doesn't really make sense for the article, but I just,
fucking peak degeneracy, man.
Kind of.
Where we're at.
I mean, that's literally eyes wide shut. Right?
Well, you know, fuck it. Fuck going to the moon. Fuck going to Mars. Fuck all that. Let's just have a fucking orgy. These people are degenerates. I hope they get some sort of fucking super AIDS and drop fucking dead in Minecraft.
Well, yeah, it's all going to be online now. So it would be in Minecraft, wouldn't it? So... anyways, anything on that before we move on? Mad
no.
Okay.
No. No. I could. I'm gonna no. No. Nothing.
Good Mad Men.
Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is an interesting little online JavaScript x86 emulator. This thing runs at about the speed of roughly a 486 in your web browser, emulating a full computer. So it's copy.sh/v86, and this thing is, I was playing around with it earlier, it's a JavaScript emulator that will emulate an x86 processor. And they've got a bunch of preloaded images here, React OS, Windows 95, FreeBSD, native Oberon, I don't actually know what that one is, Windows 98, Arch Linux, Calabria OS, looks like a lightweight Linux, a couple of different Linux kernels, Windows 1, DOS 6, FreeDOS, Solar OS, and a boot sector chess program, apparently. But and actually, the guy who wrote this, if you go to his GitHub page, he's got versions he's converted to Electron, so you can actually run Windows 95 in JavaScript as a desktop Electron app, which is just... I don't even know what that is, but it's hilarious. And I don't know if this is useful or not, but it's interesting. I mean, if nothing else, if you had some old DOS program, you could wrap it up in a web browser and, I guess, deploy it. Okay. And the last thing I have for tonight is, I may have done this one before, but if I have, it's been a long time, or maybe it was a similar project. This one is called Ventoy, and this is a boot manager that you load onto a flash stick or a flash drive. And what it does is you then load ISO files onto that flash stick, and when you boot a computer off of it, it'll just give you a list of all the ISO files, and then you pick one, and it'll boot that ISO. So for operating system installers, driver disks, live Linux CDs, that kind of thing. So if you normally need a whole bunch, I actually have a hard drive that has a little firmware menu thing on it that'll do this in hardware, but this is a pure software solution to it, where you can put together a single flash drive that has all of your operating system installers on it so that you can just have it ready to go. If you do sysop work, this thing's fairly useful. So anyways, I thought it was cool. That's all I've got for us tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit, in the IRC. Tonight, we have myself, Sardonyx, the bot, Cyber Lord, Cycros, DP View, Madman, the Coffee Maker, and UMP9. Madman, closing thoughts.
The UFO story didn't make it? We have people saying UFOs exist. And like are aliens.
It's an IHN story.
But it's Harry Reid, the former Senate Majority Leader. He's got to be trustworthy. Little green men are here. We have their shit. We're studying it.
All right, are you?
They have some no-name astrophysicist backing him up.
All right, Madman, I'll come around probe you later. Make your little alien story feel better.
All right, are you? Closing thoughts?
Nothing really. Ghislaine Maxwell's files just got dumped on Pastebin, if anyone's curious. I know I'm going to be having a little read. No, the madness continues. And I don't see any way out of it just yet. It doesn't take tons of blood.
All right, that's
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Now just go nose down and call it a night.
But shut up, Wesley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for all four. Yes or no answer. Do you believe that the Chinese government steals technology from U.S. companies? Start with Mr. Cook.
I don't know of specific cases where we have been stolen from by the government.
So you don't believe that the Chinese government's stealing technology from U.S. companies? Or you're just saying that not from yours?
I'm saying I know of no case on ours where it occurred, which is I can only speak to firsthand knowledge.
Mr. Pichai, do you believe that the Chinese government steals technology from United States companies?
Congressman, I have no firsthand knowledge of any information stolen from Google in this regard.
Mr. Zuckerberg?
Congressman, I think it's well documented that the Chinese government steals technology from American companies.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Bezos?
Richest man in the world can't work in a
You're on mute.
Mr. Bezos, I believe you're on mute.
I'm sorry. I have heard many reports of that, and I haven't seen it personally, but I've heard many reports of it.
So of all the different products that Amazon carries, you haven't seen that in any of the companies that sell products on Amazon or your company yourself?
Oh, well, certainly there are knockoff products, if that's what you mean, and there are counterfeit products and all of that. But the Chinese, if the answer is the Chinese government stealing technology, that's the thing I've read reports of but don't have personal experience with.
Before I call on the next witness, I want to recognize Mr. Pichai, who I think wants to make a correction for the hearing.
The only correction, thanks, Mr. Chairman. There was a question earlier about information with respect to China. I just wanted to acknowledge on record that I recalled in 2009, we had a well-publicized cyber attack originating there, which did exfiltrate some code from there. I just wanted to correct that on record.
Thank you, Mr. Pichai. The record will still reflect. I recognize the gentlelady from Pennsylvania for 5 minutes.